I bought like a crappy pair of scissors from Boots and a comb with my first page, you know, those plastic ones.
Beauty.
On my £23.50 a week wage and just started cutting my mate's hair. And I just kind of self-taught because there was no internet then, no videos, no DVDs, no nothing to learn from. I was literally just watching when I could and then just sort of repeating it.
Someone said to me that the worst place to be is sitting outside a barber's waiting your turn. The guy in front pops his head out and's like, oh, who's next? And the guy looks up and he goes, oh, it's all right, I'm waiting for him. And that next bloke knows he's walking into a bad haircut.
When I opened up my own shop, I wanted to be able to walk in, look at 10 busy barbers, put myself on the bench and go, I don't care which chair one, I end up,
lovely.
I know I'm going to get like a decent haircut. Yeah, I need you to cut quicker. You're not cutting quick enough. You know, a guy or a girl either side of me, sometimes doing two or three haircuts to my one haircut.
Yeah.
And I wasn't taking like an hour to do a haircut. I was still doing fast by anyone's standards because we were doing 30 haircuts in a day then, you know, it was on this kind of walk-in service. I didn't want to work in that environment. Didn't want to be that sort of conveyor belt barbershop.
Hi there, I'm Anthony Laban and you're watching the Noble Barber Podcast. We're here to cut through the crap of the industry and give the answers, or at least try and find the answers to the problems that all of us as business owners struggle with every day. Thanks very much for watching. I hope you enjoy the episode. Hi, welcome to another episode of The Noble Barber. We are here in Telford at Barber Connect, and I'm joined on the sofa by Joth Davis of Savills Barbers. We all know that, of course. And well, at this point, I tend to ask people to talk about their background, but maybe we should skip through a bit and maybe how you went from your last job to your first shop.
Yeah, I mean, I've been in the industry for, you know, we're just saying it almost as long as you have, you know, like 30, I think it's like 36 years or something.
Yeah.
It sounds...
Yeah, about the
that
same
sounds
as mine.
Really long, actually, when I say it, but I think it probably is around that time. Yeah, so I was working in salons when I was at school, when I was 14, from 14, as a Saturday job for extra money. And thought, you know, that was the way for me to go. I kind of quite like the environment. So I was working weekends and summer holidays in the salons then, hairdressing salons. And then when I left school, I went straight into it. And I worked for a company called SNL. I don't know if you remember them.
Yeah,
they were
definitely.
Part, obviously, they then became the Regis Group. I did my apprenticeship there in their salon in Sheffield.
Are you a Sheffield like lad through and through?
Yeah, I was born in London.
Okay.
Moved to Sheffield in the early 70s when my parents moved to work, and then been in Sheffield ever since. So worked as a hairdresser, but was always doing kind of gents' hair. And the salon that I worked at was really strict. So we weren't picking up scissors for like 12 months into the second year. And it was like 3 months before you were allowed to shampoo any clients. You had to go through all this sort of training. And I was kind of really desperate to kind of just get stuck in.
Yeah.
Because I was more of a hands-on, see-and-do type thing. And so I bought like a crappy pair of scissors from Boots and a comb with my first page. You know, those plastic ones.
Beauty.
On my £23.50 a week wage. And just started cutting my mate's hair. And I just kind of self-taught because there was no internet then, no videos, no DVDs, no nothing to learn from. I was literally just watching when I could and then just sort of repeating it. So I'd always done kind of more gents sort of by accident, really, because they were my mates.
Yeah.
And I was just, you know, cutting hair in the bedroom, scissor overcombing everything. Couldn't afford a pair of clippers at that point. And then got to a point where I was basically coming home from work, having something to eat, and then going out door to door around where my parents lived, just cutting hair for £3, £4, £5, and probably sometimes making more money in a night than I was in a week.
Yep.
But I didn't realise what that was doing. That was kind of teaching me how to cut hair. So by the time we fast forward and get to the sort of the first day of training with cut hair, I was kind of, kind of, you know, quite proficient in cutting hair, and I got clippers and stuff at that point. And then I sort of did like, I left there, maybe did another year in hairdressing, but was always doing mostly either kind of women's short hair or men's hair anyway. And then I just kind of, I really hated like perms because it was the 80s. So it was loads of perms and cap highlights and all those kind of things.
Yeah.
And I hated kind of women's hair really. And I just wanted to get out of it. So I saw an advertisement for a barbershop just on the outskirts of town, and it was an Italian barber's, and I went to go and work for them, and I never looked back, and I've been barbering ever since. But it wasn't until I went to go and work for them that I realised the difference between hairdressing and barbering, yeah, as the way that you were kind of taught, and the way that it was structured, and the finishing with the razor and the edging with the clippers and all that kind of stuff. So I learned a lot from those guys, and obviously shaving and all that kind of stuff as well. So that's kind of where, in a brief form, where it kind of went to.
And so there was a point then that you were obviously a working barber behind someone else's chair, that you decided to become an owner.
Yeah, I think I'd worked in quite a few barbershops, and I wasn't ready to set up on my own. I had thought about it in my sort of, late teens, early 20s or something like that. But I just didn't want the responsibility at that point. And I was, still going out hedonistic on the weekends and all that kind of stuff. So, I knew kind of working in lots of places was a really good way to sort of get, I liked that bit from that, but I didn't like the way that that guy operated. I liked the way that that guy operated. And so I was kind of picking off bits. And I think it was a barbershop I was working for in Sheffield. And the guy in the shop, who owned the shop, was saying to me, "Joth, I need you to cut quicker. You're not cutting quick enough. And I've got a guy or a girl either side of me, sometimes doing two or three haircuts to my one haircut."
Yeah.
And I wasn't taking like an hour to do a haircut. I was probably only taking 20, 25 minutes.
I was still doing
fast by anyone's standards, because, we were doing 30 haircuts in a day then, It was on this kind of walk-in service. And I sort of got where he was coming from, because he wanted bums on seats, because that was the way it was. But I didn't want to work in that environment. I didn't want to be that sort of conveyor belt barbershop. And I kind of, my argument to him was, well, look, there's six of us working in this shop. There's nine people on the bench. Seven of those people are waiting for me. The barbers that are either side of me are doing like 10, 15 minute haircuts, sitting down waiting for the next one. And 10 to 15 minutes waiting. I've got a constant stream all day. I never stop working. I know every one of my clients is coming back through that door. Can you say that for every barber in the shop? And I just kind of found that frustrating. And so
the appreciation of quality rather than quantity.
And, so I just thought, maybe do something where we can sort of, charge a little bit more and take a little bit more time. And then there was another thing that sort of happened that stuck with me, which I still talk about now in education classes all the time. And I was stood outside the shop, away from the front of the shop, having a cigarette or something. And two guys walk past me, and I know they're going into the barbershop. And one guy turned to the other guy and he goes, I hope I get the one that's any good today. And I was like, oh God, why, if one barber can cut hair in that shop really well, why can't that one barber teach anyone? Why is that guy on that bench got to go, I don't want to sit with that one. I want to sit and then feel like they've got to go up and get in the chair and have a haircut with someone that they don't want.
Someone said to me, the worst place to be is sitting outside a barber's waiting your turn. And then the guy in front, you're like, oh, after him, I'm next. The guy in front pops his head out and says, oh, who's next? And the guy looks up and he goes, oh, it's all right, I'm waiting for him. And that next bloke knows he's walking into a bad haircut.
Yeah.
And it is, I think that's always been the way in a lot of places, that one or two quality with two or three for quantity.
Yeah, so I kind of just, those sort of things stuck with me and resonated. And I just thought, that's when I opened up my own shop. Yeah. Those were the things, the two of the three things that I wanted. The third thing was, I wanted to be able to walk in to the door, look at 10, because we had 10 stations in the previous shop, look at 10 busy barbers, put myself on the bench and go, I don't care which chair I end up,
lovely.
I know I'm going to get like a decent haircut. Yeah. And that all comes back to the conversation, I hear you having all the time, and we are having a minute ago, is education. And if the education's not there, then that's not happening. And so
first shop wasn't Savills.
No, first shop was I had a bit of brief time out of hairdressing. I was hairdressing for 12, 13 years, and then I had a rock climbing injury and pulled my shoulder out of my socket. And And so I was a long time in sort of like rehabilitation.
Right.
And I was and when I came back to work, I was sort of struggling a little bit. And to cut like that story really short, I ended up getting a desk job, and I hated it. You know, I hated being sat behind a desk, but I was really struggling to sort of work. And I ended up doing a job where I was really well paid. So I stuck in that for sort of three or four years or something like that until I just literally couldn't take it anymore. And then the money that I'd taken from that, I then went into business with someone who happened to be the guy that was cutting my hair at the time. And we were in business for a few years. We'd set up, he'd already got sort of two existing businesses. I bought into that with him, and then we expanded that into another three on top of that, so we have five. And then we both just kind of, I think we both just wanted different things, really, you know. And the communication had sort of broke down, and so we decided to go our separate ways. And so we sold one of the shops, and he kept one, and I kept the other two. We started a product range that he went on to go and run, and has done fantastically well with that. And then that's when I kind of flipped everything to Savills and changed the style of the shop, which I wanted to do, which was this kind of real old school classic style. Because my thing is kind of like the 1920s and 1930s. Mm. I love all that era. I love the haircuts. I love the architecture. I love the clothing. Yeah. I just love everything about it. It's still, when you look at that kind of fashion and look at that for me, and you look at that architecture and things like that, that still looks modern now, but in a nice way. The films I used to watch growing up, like The Godfather and Touchables, those sort of things, and looking at those things and resonating with me, and that was the kind of style of shop that I wanted to go and go down. And also, it was doing the style of haircuts that I loved doing, which was classic haircuts. And people said to me, "Oh, why is it you love those sort of haircuts?" And obviously, we had the big trend with it, didn't we? Quite a few years ago, with pompadours and hard partings and all that kind of stuff. Obviously, through Scorum and what they've done and what they've achieved is just incredible. My kind of thing was, well, when you look back at photos of Cary Grant, Frank Sinatra, Elvis Presley, and you look back at those, I mean, they were like 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago. Look back at those photos now, and you go, that guy looks cool. Fantastic. You know what I mean? You know, look back at photos of me in the 1980s, and you look at my permed hair and bleached hair and long and all these things, I don't look back at those photos and go, that looks cool. You know, so those haircuts just remain all the way through. And then this, obviously, as you know, we've been in the industry a long time, you see these fashion trends just cycle within it. You know, now we're back to the mullets again, aren't we? I think this is maybe the third or fourth time now for us. Yeah.
So I keep hearing they're shallots, not mullets.
Oh, is that it? Right. Okay. Yeah. I've heard that term. Yeah. It's still a mullet to me. Yeah.
Love it. So, I mean, the thing that kind of came to my eye and why, you know, I started chasing you down and wanted us to do an episode is about the relocation. Because you had you got a very successful business, you had a beautiful store, it was pumping, it was working, and you've moved, which sounds like a massive headache for very little gain. So, you know, why put yourself through that? And if we talk about the barbershops, I know you've got an academy on there as well, and if we can do the barbers first and then the academy afterwards.
Yeah. So, the barbershop that we just left, we'd been in there for 10 years, but I've been on that road literally directly across the street in total for probably 18 years.
Wow.
So I never thought I'd leave that shop. When I built that shop,
it looked like your perfect temple to you.
It was just like, this is it. I'm never going to leave this place. And if I showed you the photos from what it looked like when we opened to what it looked like when we left, that was what I wanted to happen with the shop. I remember when we had an opening night and there was a guy that used to work for me and he was walking past and he came in and he was like, "Oh yeah, this looks really cool. But what are you going to do when the fashion changes?" And I'm like, dude, you don't get it.
Yeah.
It's not a fashion thing for me. No. It's like, this shop is going to evolve over time. And it did. It evolved brilliantly. It aged really well. More pictures were added because the walls were blank. And I didn't want to do this like Euro design. Just chuck everything on the walls and it all looks like great theme, straight away. Yeah. If you came into the shop, or anyone came into the shop and was asking about the shop, they'd have me for like hours, because I'd be like, well, pointing at things on the wall, there was a story behind everything.
Every
picture, every ornament, every boxing glove, every guitar string, everything. There was a story behind everything out there. I could tell you where I bought it, how much I paid for it, who brought it to me, where it came from. It was, and that meant something to me, So, and that was always what I wanted. I wanted that feel and that.
And were you still adding to that? Nine, 10 years later?
Yeah.
So when you knew you were going, is there an emotion? What was the emotion at that point?
Do you know what? I wasn't kind of as emotionally attached to it as I thought I was going to be when we left. I thought I was going to be like, oh my God, this feels really weird. You know, it didn't. It just felt right. It felt the right time to move. And the street that we were on, the retail had changed a little bit. It had gone into decline. And where we are now, this isn't something that I've done, you know, just in a couple of months. This has been in the planning for 6 or 7 years.
Wow.
So they've been building this sort of part of town and investing loads of money into it. And when I knew it was happening, I wanted to be there. And so that's why it's been so long. But even at the time when I was talking to them like 6 or 7 years ago, I was like, not sure whether I don't, because that part of the city was just dead. It was done. Yeah. And that was the heart of the city as well. So I still wasn't sure whether it was the right thing to do. But post-COVID, if it didn't make sense, then it was just like a no-brainer, because they'd altered the sort of layout of the center of the town, and they'd blocked off parts of the street, and the footfall had just gone down, and I just felt like we were just standing still and just treading water. We were doing okay, and we were, you know, the business was making money, and we didn't have as many barbers as we used to have, and I needed to do something to inject something back into the business to bring us all back up again, and I don't like standing still, and I felt like we were just standing still. I needed to do something to move forward. And so I kind of dug really deep and we didn't borrow any money. We just used the money that was in the company. I never take money out of the company really, unless I really need it. I live on what I need to. Yes, I drive a nice car, and yes, I've got a nice house, but work really hard for it. That's barbershop is not the only business we own. We own other things as well. I've got another barbershop in the suburb, and we have a product range, and obviously the academy, and other things as well, and property. And I was like, and it was a sum of money that went into that shop as well.
That was some dough gone into that building.
You know, if you've done the barbershop, and it was over three floors, and it was just, there was nothing in it at all. It was literally just brick and dust. There was no staircase in there. There was no flooring. There was no water, no electricity. It was literally less than a shell. And
was it really, it was you needing some kind of injection, some impetus? Did you have a lease to get out of, or was your lease coming to an end?
I had a 15-year lease with a 10-year break. And so I enacted the break in 10 years.
It was now or never.
And that just timed right with the retail opening in that sort of part of the city, in that development, as they're all just starting to open now. I think, you know, COVID played into us a little bit for that one, because that delayed the build a little bit, which made that easier for us to sort of move into that unit.
And were you the design person, or were you working with interiors
architects? All myself. So I won't have anybody do it.
And you're still behind a chair. And running the business.
I
survival all right, or did it just feel like your whole world got absorbed by this?
It was really, really stressful. Hmm. Yeah. Shop visits have never been that stressful to me. Because I just kind of, it's always kind of been all right. I've just gone, I'm pretty laid back by it. It's just like, it's going to take as long as it takes. And obviously we know what, I'm always sort of budgeting, obviously, what money we've got to spend at the beginning and then finding everything to work. But I had six, seven years to plan this.
Yeah.
So I was, any minute, at any moment I'd got, I was just on the internet constantly researching units, you know, and mirrors, then, things like that, and trying to find them all at the right price and not just go to the wholesaler and just go, I'll have those chairs and have those mirrors. And I didn't want that. I wanted something that's got some kind of feel to it, you know.
Mate. Yeah. It does sound like a headache and chips, to be fair, but it's, I mean, now that you're at the other end of this.
Well, the stressful thing was we were 2 weeks late in starting because the council said, we need to come in and do some works and you can't go in until that's done. Even though we could have worked, really, they basically didn't want us in the building for some stupid health and safety thing. That 2 weeks delay at the beginning caused a 2 weeks delay on the back end, which meant the shop fitters had to come out and I needed them to rip out the other shop.
Right.
And
so by logistics became...
Before that, 10 days before the shop fit was due to start, the shop fitter that I had, which I had for probably 6 months, pulled out 10 days to go. So 10 days to go, I had to find another shop fitter.
Jeez.
And then got them. And then there was a delay for 2 weeks. But I kind of think that that was meant to be because the guys that I had on the shop fit were brilliant.
Yeah.
It made it easy.
I mean,
yeah.
It looks amazing. But again, though, it's great quality and it's got that deco vibe to it. But again, it's not, you've steered away from, you know, Disney theme restaurant.
Yeah.
So it does look like you've got the bare bones. Do you see it progressing in the same way of adding to it? Or do you look at it and go, that's it, complete?
No. There's lots of walls that are blank. There's lots of spaces for furniture to go in and things like that. I want to fill it
but
to a point.
But you're ready for, there's now a year or two of it settling, if you like.
And we need to fill it to a point that it's a workable space. And then anything else after that then just gets added and added. And although we had lots of stuff from the other shop that we could have just plastered all the walls with and it would have all been done, there was a lot of stuff on that walls that was quite old. And
time to
retire it off. And one of the, one of the sort of things I kind of underestimated was when I was, obviously, because I sold everything in the shop, so all the chairs, all the furniture, all this kind of stuff. So I started putting videos on Instagram going, look, chairs are for sale, everything's pretty much for sale apart from a couple of things. If anybody's interested, let me know. And I was inundated.
Amazing.
I mean, the chairs obviously sold really quickly. The cow we had in the window sold really quickly, which is really bizarre because everybody asks the story behind the cow, which is really boring now. But there were so many people from abroad that were just kind of going, oh, what about the chairs? I'm like, dude, I'm not shipping the chairs. And like, but what about pictures? Anything? Could you just send, I just want something from Savills on the wall.
I
was like,
that's
what?
Lovely.
That's kind of really nice that people kind of held the shop in that sort of high esteem. So, and I forgot about the fuss that was created when we built that shop because it just went viral, you know.
I know, it's lovely. And so now... It exists, it's there. Yeah. The picture's out of your head and living in the real world.
Yeah.
Bank account's fairly empty, I take it.
Yeah.
staff are happy, everyone's loving their new home.
Yeah.
You feel about it when you go in the morning?
Yeah, I mean, I've only just sort of really got the chance to settle into it in the last sort of couple of weeks because I've been busy coming out of the other shop as well because I literally had to do all that myself. But now I'm in and it's working and we're busy and the footfall's up massively and now I'm looking for new barbers. So I'm interviewing all the time.
The injection's worked.
Yeah, it has. And being there has worked. And now, you know, people are talking about the shop again and that's sort of creating,
and the,
you know.
The spikes, I don't know the meterage or whatever. It's three floors. Is it bigger space? Have you got more chairs? Have you got more room? Is the potential turnover greater than it would have been before?
Yes.
So there's an economic business plan in there of not just moving same for same. There's an expansion.
So we've got slightly less barber's chairs now. We used to have 10 station barbershop. And now we've got 8. So we've got 4 downstairs, 3 upstairs. But we always sort of bounced between 8 and 10, 8 and yeah. 10. It never really sort of stayed at 10, and then sometimes it go down to 7 or 6 or something like that. So, and we're gradually now starting to fill those chairs back up again. So all the chairs downstairs are full, and I'm upstairs at the weekend because I only do the sort of Friday, Saturday because I've got teaching plan for the rest of the week. And but now I'm interviewing because we are, the guys are just flat out busy all the time, and we're just turning people away.
And would you add more, is there space for more chairs to go?
Yeah, because that's just the barbershop in the room next door upstairs, because we've got, if you look at the retail unit, we've got the ground and the lower, and the ground and the upper upstairs, but then we've also got the upper of the unit next door as well.
Cool.
And that's where
so
we run the...
more expansion to grow
so there's
into.
Seven chairs in there.
Wow.
And that's just for the academy, and that's where we'll run the academy from. So we've got a specific space just for the academy.
Fantastic.
Which is kind of quite exciting for me, yeah.
So the move for the store and your barbers, successful, worth the headache, worth the hassle?
Yeah, definitely, yeah. And... you know, one of the other things that I wanted to do with that shop as well, because we always did really well with retail when the footfall was high. And then as the footfall had dropped off, the retail, just unless people, barbers were selling it, it just wasn't. People weren't walking into the shop
picking
and going, you know. Now we had this huge sort of bookcase made with
looks
a ladder on it,
which was just
mega. And so we've got in all these skincare range of products and leather goods and things like that. So I kind of... And because Sheffield lost the John Lewis store during COVID, so there's nothing in town where for guys to go and get those kind of things.
Yep.
So I want us to be that destination again for people to come in and do that, because retail should be a big part of anyone's barbershop business.
Well, it's interesting you say that. One of the big conversations I have with barbershops and with the product companies is that, you know, it's tough flogging the product.
Well, it is, yeah, and. But then that comes down to education as well, doesn't it, really? And I never tell my barbers to sell, because I've never been that kind of person. I just think if you're doing your job properly,
you should
the product should sell itself.
Yeah.
And that is, you've kind of, at the beginning of the haircut, you've talked about the product and what product they want and what product they use. And then you're at the end of the haircut, you're explaining what product you're using and how you're using it, so that you by the time you finish, the guy goes, oh, what was that product you used?
Yeah.
Great, I'll have some of that. And he knows exactly how to use it. He knows exactly how to put it in his hair. He gets up the following morning and his hair looks just as good as it does as when he walked out of the barbershop. Because that's one of my room 101 bugbearers. Walking into a busy barbershop and hearing the customer say to the barber, wow, that looks great. Mega, mega, mega. I wish I could make it look as good as you make it look. I'm your barber's not doing your job properly, if that's right. He should be showing you how to use a hairdryer, showing you how to use a product, what product to use. So that all
should be back. And I think there's definitely now,
the
men's haircuts are much more about the styling, about the products, about that. And guys are much more aware. You know, most guys have more shelving now in the bathroom for their toiletries.
Yeah. And guys are happy to spend that kind of money.
Yeah.
And in Sheffield, it's really difficult because we've got something called the Yorkshire War Cry. Have you heard that?
No, go on in.
How much?
You know, right.
So you kind of go on this, like, so we're battling that a little bit as well. But now guys will, you know, my clients will come in and happily spend that kind of money.
It looks amazing. It really does. So
now...
Top floor, you mentioned academy, and again, we just had literally before we came on a big volatile chat about training with Ian Harold off camera. But you have, you know, obviously your background is education, and now you have this beautiful education space. What's the plan for Savills Education and the future for that?
Well, so the plan is to do what we've done previously before with the academy, which is 1, 2, and 3 day courses for barbers and hairdressers that are already qualified that want to upskill. So either basic clipper or advanced fading or 1 day beards and shaves or facials, because we do facials now as well. So we'll do those courses that we did before as well. But also we're now in a position where we can do full like apprenticeship training and barber training. So that'll be a two-pronged approach. One is the guys that we were talking about that maybe in their kind of late 20s, 30s can't get an apprenticeship, but happy to spend, you know, 4 or 5, 6 grand or whatever they want to spend to come and do that kind of course part time, full time, whatever they, however that works for them, so that we will be able to do that. And then we've also linked in with a training provider in, based in Barnsley called Total Training. Okay. And they cover from kind of like back in Liverpool to Leicester or something like that. So they cover a huge area. And we, because the girls that work there, I've worked with them before when they've worked at Interserve in various other places when they've done sort of the training for our apprentices, all the box ticking, if you like. Yeah, I never let them do the training. I always did that myself. Yeah,
but they get their MVQ qualification.
Yeah, so they get their MVQs. And we're working with them. So anyone that's based in a salon or a barbershop that's doing barber training in across that area that's under their umbrella, they will come to us for twice a month or once a week or something like that, and we'll do all the training for that, and then obviously we then split the, you know, the couple of funding with them. So we'll.
And did you find the short courses always went well previously?
Yeah, really well. I mean, I started that because it was totally kind of by, I won't say it was by accident because I purposely started it, but I never intended to. It was just because people were asking loads of questions on social media about the hair call. Do you start from the top or the back or the center? You know, and it was like, and I was trying to answer them all, and, it, and then the followers got up and up and up, and then we went into the, you know, over 100,000, and we were just like, I just can't do this. And then people were asking, oh, would you do a course? Would you teach? I was like, oh, okay, let's put some courses on and see what happens. And so I remember the first course we did. I opened up on a Sunday, so I did a shaving course, wet shaving course to 10 people, and then I tagged a 3-day advanced course on after that from the Monday to the Wednesday. So I had some people that were on the shaving course and then also on the advanced course as well that did the whole sort of 4 days. And it was all booked via the website because sort of at the beginning we're going backwards and forwards with email and trying to get to it. So just like, I put all the dates on the website. It was all bookable through the website. And so I've got 10 people in the classroom, in the shop, the old shop that we had, and I had a couple of people from work with me to help me out for the day, and had a videographer, so I thought I'll film it might be nice for social and all that kind of stuff. And I had no idea. I mean, no idea. I like, okay, so I'm just going to introduce myself. Obviously, you know me anyway because you've come on the course. I'm just going to go through you and just tell me, you know, a bit about yourself, how long you've been hairdressing, how long you've been barbering, you know, whereabouts in the UK you're from, etc., and all that. First guy goes, I mean, it's like 9 years ago now, so I can't remember his name, but I know where he came from. Right. I never forget it. And he goes, my name's John Smith, and I'm from Sydney, Australia. And I was like, sorry, did you say, see? And he's like, yeah, Sydney, Australia. And I was like, are you must, obviously just come here for a break. And then he's like, no, just come for the course. And I was like, and he'd come for the 4 days. I was like, oh, shit. So thanks, dude. It's like, great. And then the next guy, and he goes, my name's Dave Smith. And he goes, well, I'm from New Zealand.
Holy
like,
shit. What?
The next guy was from Canada. The next guy, Halifax, Nova Scotia, Mark Payton, who's become a really good friend of mine now.
Oh,
and the next guy was a family of three, mother and father and mom and son. And they come from Pants Grass in Oregon in the USA. And then I was just this is mental. But it just, that just continued. Yeah. We had groups of people from China and all
and
across
the course,
Europe,
have you added
America,
and added
Canada,
to these courses? Yeah, or are you still running the same?
So I was running those same courses. Yeah. And I've changed the wording and I changed the courses a little bit. And really the kind of, the 3-day, as it was advanced, and the 3-day basic was the same course because they were all live models. But I just kind of, I realized quite quickly that if I didn't call it basic and didn't call it advanced, what I ended up with was a lot of advanced people on a course and someone that wasn't so. And then I was having to spend too much time with that one person, which took it away from everybody else. So I kind of changed the wording of the courses to stop that from happening. But I was having people coming on the course that they'd been barbering for like 20 years.
Yeah.
And I was just going, this is just
But that's
mental.
The thing I've discovered since doing the podcast is, you know, everyone is very keen to upskill. You know, I think there's a real understanding that there's more to it than what we've been doing for 20 or 30 years.
Yeah.
And everybody shows a great thing about our industry, I think.
Yeah. everybody left really happy. We had loads of good feedback from it, and they were all sort of good. And because I would do this sort of breakdown at the end and go, right, okay, just tell me what you've got out of the course. I wanted to know what everybody had got out of the course, so I knew somebody had learned something, and everybody had gone, yeah, well, I've got this, I've got that, and that fading bit, that little thing that you did there, where you just that, so, just something.
So
you know,
what's the difference for you? Obviously, functionally and day to day, it's different, and content's different. But what's different for you between the 2, 3, 4 days with people of experience and the trainee, the training apprentice that's coming in from day one? Well, coming in once or twice.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's much easier to teach the people that have already got some kind of dexterity and skill, the ones that have got no dexterity and skill, because I've always trained my own apprentices.
Yeah.
And
but these apprentices aren't your staff. These are people who are coming to become...
Yeah, yeah. But effectively, it's going to be done the same way as I would teach my own apprentices anyway. Yeah. And then, but they will also have a series of sort of mannequin heads in the beginning, which I will give them. They take that back to the salon, and they have homework to do between then and the next time they come in. And if that's not done,
that's the bit I wanted to talk to. So they're going back to their place of employment. Yes. This is the bit that I find the troublesome. Is, are you aware that are you dealing with the stores they work in to make them aware of what they need to be doing?
I'll be contacting all.
Do you know
what
I mean? Because I think a lot of the colleges, they do their bit, they come back, they get nothing.
Some of them will be really good, and some of them won't be. But I will find out really quickly the ones that aren't, because when they come back in the following week, and I go, okay, show me the photos, and if it's not done, and I go, okay, we need to have a breakout, a little conversation, take them into another room, have a conversation with them. Have you been having the training? Well, no, they haven't. They've been too busy. It's like, right, okay, I need to pick up the phone. And that will be me phoning them going, I'm not here to do all that work. I can't get them where they need to be on one day a week for 12 months or twice a week.
That's
You've
the
got
issue.
To do they, that work. Yeah. And if you want that person to be great and working in your salon and busy, I can do that, but you've got to meet me halfway.
But you know that's going to be part of your... But you're aware that's going to be part of... That you've not just got to educate the student, you've got to educate the store that's employing them.
Yeah, yeah. And if it's not done, I will find somewhere else for that person to go and remove them from that salon, because that's really important. Putting my name to it.
No, that's what I mean. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, this is very reputable.
Yeah.
And it's an interesting one in the fact that it is an apprenticeship. So what time scale are these guys going to be working to?
So it's an apprenticeship, so it's a VTCT, so it's over 12 months. So depending on whether that's obviously whether it includes level 3 now, isn't it, where they're shaming everything
else.
Have
you got any started yet? When's the first lot starting?
So I've got an invitation day on the 3rd of July between 12 o'clock and 7 p.m. And that's inviting anybody that wants to either look at sort of, you know, 1, 2, 3 day through courses or apprenticeships. And that will be apprenticeship... apprentice and their parents.
Well, we'll stick all those details on your episode when it goes out, if people can contact you.
Yeah, and that one, I'm also inviting the salon owners as well to come, because I really want to speak to them at the same time and tell them the importance of what their job is once I've obviously done what I need to do with them, and in order to follow that through. And I did this once before, and I did a 30-week course and a 60-week course or something. So one was like one day a week, one's 2 days a week, something like that. So it's like a 6-month and a 12-month course. And I put it on the website, and this guy booked in, and I thought, I'll just try it with this one person. And it didn't end well, because he's in his early 20s, and obviously his parents have gone, look, what do you want to do with your life? I don't know. Pick barbering. Bought him this course. I put him on the course. It was supposed to be 2 days a week for 6 months. I ended up doing it for over 12 months, because at 6 months he wasn't doing the stuff that he was doing between.
And this
he kept
is,
making excuses and excuses. It's one until I got his parents in and told them, and they were like, oh, we didn't realise this. Look, no, I'm not letting him go at 6 months. I continued to train him at my cost. I lost money on that, you know, but
did
I wasn't going to let him go.
Is he working?
Yeah, he's working as a barber now, yeah.
Well done.
Yeah.
And so... Just we could sit here for the rest of the afternoon.
Oh my God,
so just to kind of bring us to a natural close, big reason we met was about relocation. I was speaking to lots of barbers who are in smaller sites that want to move to bigger. They're wanting to relocate. Is it worth it?
Yes.
And what should be your motivation?
Well, location is obviously key. Your motivation can't be about money. your motivation's got to be about you wanting to move forward and having a plan to move forward and what you want to do with that. Obviously, I've got the academy, I've got the retail, I've got the existing shop that's running already anyway. So you've got to think about all those things under that umbrella.
So make sure you're doing it for a reason, not for the kind of vanity and the...
Yeah, and also just don't be frightened to put your prices up. I mean, I've always been that guy that goes, oh, looking at what everybody else is charging, but you know, we shouldn't do. And I go, I never really worry about what anybody else is doing, because then you're not concentrating on what you're doing. So I've never worried about barbershops.
You know what your haircuts cost you, and that's it.
I made that mistake myself, and I only found out recently, literally weeks ago, because I was like, I only work in 2 days a week, and my clients were struggling to get in because some of the other barbers' clients were booking in with me because they'd go, well, I'll get Joff to do it this time because he's always really busy, but now I can book with him again. And I was getting booked up with those clients. We charge between 23 and 26 quid for a standard skin fade, something like that. So I went, right, okay, I'm struggling to get my 25, 30-year-old clients in. I'll put my prices up massively and I'll keep
my... the crowd.
I'll put it up to 30 quid.
Yeah.
And I will charge all my existing clients the same price. But it's just a way of like putting people off booking in. I've never had so many new clients.
No, it's really true.
Yeah.
Mate, thank you very much.
Great
now, hang on,
you.
Just to round it up, the cow.
So, the cow, it was the most asked question in the shop for years and years and years. Savills first started on a little side street in the centre of town. It was a little three-chair shop. And it was a really old Victorian building. And when we came in, it had this like really low false ceiling in and everything. And I knew there was a good ceiling height up there. So knocked out the ceiling height. When I knocked it out, it went up like another 15 foot. But then it left this sort of space at the top of the stairs that went down into the basement. It's like a sort of mezzanine level. And I was doing this old school, but still in partnership with this guy. And I'm like, I want to put like a marlin on there or a stag's head or something like that. Something to fill that sort of space. And he was like, no, I don't want to like put dead animals on the wall. You might offend students and things like that. I mean, and it's just like 2009.
Right.
So, and I was like, oh, okay, I'll have a look for something else. And I'm looking on the computer to try and find something. I don't know what I'm looking at really. And then in the corner of the screen, I just see this advert that says life-size laying down cow. And I went, click. I was like, that just made me giggle.
Love it.
And so, and it was just like a fiberglass cow. And I thought, I wonder if it'll fit. Measured the height. I was like, yeah. So there's me and my business partner walking it down the middle of the high street, this cow, walking it into this tiny little barbershop. But every time someone came in, it became this massive talking point.
Like, yeah.
No reason at all. It was just like
the cow didn't make the cut.
And it became like a thing for
years. The cow's not in the new building?
No, and everyone said, you've got to take the cow with you. What are you going to do with the cow? And I was like, it's just time to do something different. It's time to just sort of move on.
Well, in the words of Bart Simpson, don't have a cow, man. Thank you so much for your time.
Yeah.
I'm sure we're going to get back together and do
Definitely,
another one.
Yeah.
I think I'd love to come back and talk to you once you've got your apprenticeship schemes going on.
Space at the shop. We'd love
and
to have
I'll
you
come
there.
Up
yeah.
and spend some time yeah. In Sheffield. I love Sheffield anyway.
Yeah.
Buddy,
yeah.
thank you.
Yeah.
You've been listening to The Noble Barber and Joff Davis. If you're interested in his schemes and training programs, check the links. We'll make sure it's all up there on this episode. Thank you.
Hi there. If you've got a story or know someone with a story or have a topic that you think we should cover that we haven't yet, please get in touch. We'd love to speak to you.